signatories of those who signed the complaint against the Reverend Rod Parsley of the World Harvest Church and the Reverend Russell Johnson of Fairfield Christian Church for improperly using their churches and affiliated entities, the Center for Moral Clarity and the Ohio Restoration Project and Reformation Ohio, for partisan political activities, particularly in the support of the 2006 gubernatorial candidacy of the Secretary of State Kenneth J. Blackwell. The Christian and Jewish clergy and their titles are as follows. Reverend Mark Bellatini, the Universalist Unitarian Association of Free Churches. Rabbi Harold J. Berman of the Jewish Tradition. Rabbi Barnett J. Brickner of the Jewish Tradition. Reverend Eric H. Brown, Christian Church Disciples of Christ. Reverend Richard Barnett, Episcopal Church. Reverend Kim Keith LaBall, the American Baptist Church. Reverend Jennifer Kimball Castro, United Methodist Church.
The Reverend Dr. William H. Castro, Jr., United Methodist Church. Mr. J. B. Davis, Ohio Council of Churches. Reverend F. Allen Debelak, Lutheran Church. Reverend Wendy Fish, the Unitarian Universalist Association of Free Churches. Reverend Richard Flynn, United Church of Christ. Rabbi Joan S. Friedman of the Jewish Tradition. Reverend Cindy Garn, United Methodist Church. Reverend Dr. Herbert Goetz, Jr., United Church of Christ. Reverend Philip Hart, United Church of Christ.
The Reverend G. Forrest Hoppe, the United Church of Christ. The Reverend Charles K. Cook, United Church of Christ. The Reverend David W. Meredith, the United Methodist Church. The Reverend Becky Metchelfelder, the Episcopal Church. The Reverend Roger Miller, the United Church of Christ. The Reverend Eric Mooring, the Evangelical Lutheran Church. Joanne Ney, the United Church of Christ. The Reverend Dr. Lee Ann Reed, the Episcopal Church. The Reverend Alicia H. Rivers, the United Methodist Church.
Reverend Jack Seville, Jr., United Church of Christ. Reverend David A. Van Dyke, Presbyterian Church. Reverend James Waugh, United Methodist. Reverend Eric Williams, North Congregational, United Church of Christ. The following clergy have asked that their names be released with the original signers. Reverend Bob Childs, United Methodist Church. Reverend John Edgar, United Methodist Church for All People. Reverend Ed Lewis, United Methodist Church. Reverend Patricia Wagner, United Methodist Church.
Eric Williams has joined us, and so I'd like to invite Eric to come at this time. We are going to take questions from the press. So please, if you have a question, identify your organization, and we will, Eric and others will take the questions from the press.
Okay. If I may just say a couple of things. One, I want to thank the press and the media for all the attention they've given to this concern, because this is not a personal concern as, you know, one religious leader to another. This is a public concern that really affects everyone throughout the state of Ohio. And so I think it needs to remain a public conversation about issues that affect all of us. And the other thing I'd like to say is I'm so grateful and so proud to be able to stand with my colleagues and also with those who could not be here today to show you, to tell you that we come from different traditions. We come perhaps from different theological points of view. We come from different experiences, but we've all come together around this one single concern. And so we have different voices speaking out on this one single concern. So thank you very much. I wonder if there are any questions you'd like to ask anyone, please.
Evan Davis, Pacifica Radio. some talk among members of the public, as evidenced by letters to the editors of various local papers, seems to indicate a sentiment that the tax-exempt status for all churches should be lifted universally. How would that impact some of the churches represented here, and do you think that's a good thing?
I'm not concerned that this complaint will affect that kind of change in the law. I'm concerned that this complaint will help enforce the law, because I think as churches, as religious organizations, as well as tax-exempt organizations, we've enjoyed the unique role that we can play in the wider community that I think these rules demonstrate. We're really concerned of simply upholding the law, because I think we've enjoyed the long history we've had of working alongside it as partners with the government, but not in government.
Well, just to elaborate on that question a little bit, if I may, how would you then differentiate between, say, the Unitarian Church in California that was recently investigated by the IRS for some statements that were made there in opposition to U.S. foreign policy and the church that you're now complaining against?
Yeah, I think the example you gave of the Episcopal Church in California was a sermon that was preached, as I understand, raising some concerns around perhaps policy or issues, and because of that engaging sermon, the concerns were raised. That, I think, is very different from what's happening here in Ohio that I'm concerned about. I think here there is a clear pattern, there's an intentional pattern of consistently over and over again engaging in clearly, in my mind, partisan political activity. It's not a one Sunday morning, one sermon that raises concerns about what's happening in our country, but a pattern that consistently raises up a candidate who holds the values that these churches value. Yeah, I've been asked several times why don't I follow that teaching that if I have a concern with my brother, to take it to my brother. And quite honestly, I have no personal relationship, and I have no personal concern with either of the two religious leaders. I believe this is a public issue that affects everyone in the state of Ohio, so I think that teaching really does not apply. I think it's important that we stay focused on the activities, we stay focused on the complaint, and we fairly stay focused on who this impacts. So this is not an issue between two religious leaders. This is an issue that affects everyone in the state of Ohio.
Be
wonderful.
I am David Meredith. There was never any intention to keep our name secret. There was never any intention to keep our names secret. We filed the complaint and we signed it, and when the opportunity came to check with everyone, we have stepped up.
Was there any reason to not step up?
No. The bottom line, you're dealing with very busy clergy, and talking to them all, even finding them all, is a challenge for anyone. So when that process was fulfilled, here we are. And we're proud to be here. We were proud to be on this list last week.
I'm Jack Seville, and okay. My name is Jack Seville. I'm the interim conference minister of the United Church of Christ in Ohio, and I'm not anonymous. My name was in the very first article that was written. I was identified by the Columbus Dispatch as a signatory to the complaint, and I was surprised to be included in the 31 anonymous by the statements subsequent to that. I signed the document because I'm very concerned whenever I sense that we and the in the religious organizations in our nation step across lines that have been honored historically to separate church and state. And I would be concerned no matter what organization it was. So this is not a personal thing that I feel about any particular church in this area. I also would like to say I've been a candidate politically twice in my life, and I know that side of it as well. And I always seek to assure that the marketplace of political ideas is free and open to all persons who are candidating for office. And so that's why I signed it. Just like the city in Spain, Sevilla, S-E-V-I-L-L-E.
We'll get someone else to answer. Would you identify your paper and or?
Joe Hamilton.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Could a number of others explain, one, why they decided to sign, and two, if they have informed their congregations that they did sign, what sort of reaction?
Do any of my sisters want to respond? Right. A lot of men have, or brothers, or brothers.
I didn't formally notify the congregation. Oh, sorry. Al Debelak, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And I did notify the whole congregation just this week by our front page newsletter that goes out. On Sunday, I simply clarified to folks when I gave announcements that I had to correct the press because it was 30 pastors and a rabbi, and that they'd get a song from me eventually on it. Reception seemed to be quite good and mixed. I think in any congregation it would be mixed. I think one of the reasons I jumped into this was that it's, for me, it's a we. This is not an us-them. The example I gave the other day, it's like what happened up in Cleveland at the Browns game. It's you have the stadium, you have everybody in the stadium, you have the crowd, you have the people playing, and then you get this guy who runs out on the field, and he's not supposed to be there. He was probably from the dog pound. But he comes out on the field, and he's out where he shouldn't be. A good game runs when the people in the stands stay in the stands and yell like crazy for either side. Both sides go at it like nuts. Out on the field, you have the two teams playing. You don't want the teams entering the stadium and running after the people up in the stands, and you don't want the people in the stands being involved in the game. And for the safety of everybody and for the well-being of the whole of us, we've got to keep the boundaries. You've got to keep the walls. We've got to respect those. And we've got to hopefully then imagine ourselves in a place where there's freedom, protection, and the ability to be ourselves completely. Yeah.
Beth Gordon, excuse me, USA Management. If you say this is not an us-them situation, then why was there any contact made to these pastors, Pastor Price or Pastor Johnson, prior to taking this directly to the IRS?
No, I think Eric already addressed that. But there wasn't a need to go to individuals. This is something for the whole society to look at. Debelak.
Again.
Debelak. Alan, yeah.
Are there other questions?
She was going to have a female.
My sisters want to respond? It's a little more. It's not yet.
Yeah, no, I'm turning that one over. I could have done the previous one.
But not this one? Okay. Someone with a little history of the IRS policy.
I don't know the history of the IRS. I think that legislation was based on practices. It was almost like form followed function in the United States in that sense. If you go back to the Constitution and the intelligent designers who framed it, you begin to sense that they were concerned that this nation not become embroiled in the kind of influx from religious leaders and religious points of views to the point that this nation would be divided over and over again over religious wars, groups against groups. And so I think that if you look back in that time, and I was deeply involved in some of the things that were going on in that time around the civil rights movement, that some of the rules got clarified at that time because of what was happening in the civil rights movement as well as what was happening in the nation. So I'd just like to say that we had prior guidance prior to 1950s, and it's the United States Constitution and the separation between church and state that's there, and the value of religious liberty for all that's there, and keeping those separate, I think, has been a pretty good experiment.
Kim Keithler-Ball. Keithler is K-E-E-T-H-L-E-R, and then Ball, no hyphen, all three together. I'm American Baptist, and I told my congregation this past Sunday, I actually appreciated that we had a little bit of a chance to do that, a little bit of time, because a lot of us are pastors, to share that with our congregation so they wouldn't necessarily read it in the newspaper first. So it was politeness to the group of people that we serve. And I knew when I put my pen to the paper, you know, anonymity was not my concern. I made a commitment to the cause in that signing. When I told my congregation on Sunday during our worship service, there was a round of spontaneous applause. So I appreciated that very much. There was no follow-up afterwards. Now, that doesn't say that every single person was 100% pleased, but I didn't hear from anyone that they weren't. So a number of people spoke to me very positively. They'd been concerned about this issue for some time. As American Baptists, one of our core values, as a lot of the other traditions here have, we value separation of church and state. So for us, this issue falls in that realm. And precisely the issue is running a political campaign from a church for a particular candidate. And that's the specific thing that we have an issue with. And so I was very pleased and encouraged by my congregation's response, and now feel that I'm here with their support.
We're going to have a second response to that.
I'm Leanne Reet. It's L-E-E, second word A-N-N-E, R-E-A-T, from the Episcopal Church. I preached on Sunday in response, or in light of the collect that was read in all Episcopal churches this week, talking about our call to be disciples, and our call as disciples to not only follow but to lead. And I talked about the need for a broader voice to be heard in the religious arena, a voice that takes into account the freedoms that we enjoy as Americans and the freedoms that we enjoy as people of faith, freedom that was an original gift from God as our creator. The response of my congregation, there were a lot of tears in the congregation, tears of pride, and they are very much in support of the action that this group of clergy, as well as many others who have signed and who are asking to sign on to this complaint. And so we can stand very proudly as people of faith, not as an unholy alliance, but as people of faith. Amen. And we can be very sure that we are standing up as Americans, proud to be Americans, proud that our Constitution provides us the guarantee of freedom of religion.
Before we get an answer to that, I know that there are lists of our names and affiliations to help you with spelling and other things. So if you don't get one, make sure you get a copy of the list. Do you want to respond to that, Eric, where we are in the process of additional signers?
Simply to say that I've had folks from all over the state and around the country emailing me saying, I would like to sign in. May I read the document? May I sign in? I've got pastors' grandsons who want to ask their pastor. I mean, the network is happening informally and a bit formally, but folks are very interested in participating in this, and we're glad to have them do that.
Do we have a number yet?
We don't, because not all those requests are coming through me. I can tell you that I've had close to 24 requests myself, just to give an indication of the interest that's starting to pick up as they read about it, as they hear about it, as they talk about it around the country.
I'm Terry Spencer from the Associated Press here in Columbus. I've been talking to some religion and politics professors who say that, you know, who studies more of the conservative side, one more of the liberal side. One said, well, I'd love to agree with them, but really what this Reformation movement is doing is within their constitutional bounds, especially since one of their signature events was on the state house grounds in the public square, acting as citizens rather than from the pulpit. And they also, and others have brought up the point, how is what they do, inviting Kenneth Blackwell to the pulpit or to stand on stage with them, any different than a John Kerry appearing in one of your churches or any Democratic candidate appearing in one of your churches prior to an election or being featured or pointed to from the pulpit?
A couple of responses to that. First, I think the IRS code is clear about the difference between electioneering for candidates and issue-related legislative action and politics. The difference between all the other churches that I know, the folks that I know up here, and what we see happening with Reverend Parsley and Reverend Johnson and their affiliate groups is that if we have a public figure in our pulpits, they're not the only public figure in our pulpits, that we will invite others. It's not about one way, but about helping our congregation sort of hear the broad range of options from a broad range of candidates so that they can make an informed decision as a citizen and an informed decision as a person of faith. That's very, very different, and that is clearly allowed within the IRS stipulation. Second, regarding the legislative work, can't be more than, it has to be an insubstantial amount of what the organization is about. And so in the congregations that I know here and the faith communities that I know standing up here, yes, we engage in some issue advocacy, but it is not the heart, core, and soul of our ministries and what we do with people in the propagation of faith.
Mark Mamick from the Plain Dealer again. Has anyone here thought about inviting and has asked Kenneth Blackwell to speak to their church as a way to not only give him a chance, but also maybe then your congregations to really make their decision if they don't want him or they do want him?
Has anybody? Nope. If you have, you get to answer this one.
Actually, I guess that's
let me take
the question.
This one.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
The answer is no. And I'm sorry, Eric Brown. Most churches do not invite candidates to their churches to promote or to campaign for them. Candidates ask if it is all right if they come. And of course, if you're a real church, everybody is welcome in the church who wants to come. And so if a candidate wants to come and visit, that's fine. The issue is that the candidate is not endorsed from the pulpit nor by the religious organization. All candidates have the freedom to visit a congregation and say, I'm here, look at me. But the church does not have the legal right if they want to enjoy their tax-exempt status. The church does not, or the religious organization does not have the legal right to endorse any candidate, even if they come and visit.
So when John Kerry appears, if they've canvassed and chosen a congregation that they'd like to hear it and ask him to come, if they can come?
Yeah. Yeah, I've never had a candidate come to Woodland Christian Church that I personally invited. They asked me, can they come? It's a concern, yes. Christians have never gotten along on every issue throughout the 2,000-year history of the church. And so it is a concern because of the popularity of these two ministers, not just in Ohio, but nationwide. But the issue is, once again, whether these men and their organizations are abiding by the law, are operating in political activities with integrity. All churches ought to at least want to follow the law if you want to enjoy the benefits that that particular law gives you. So if you want your tax-exempt status, follow the law. And I think all of us in here know how to promote politicians and folks running for office in a fair way that allows their members to make their own choices. Our problem is we think we have a clear violation of one of the tax-exempt laws in which one particular candidate is being endorsed. That's what the problem is. If no candidate were endorsed by the organization, but a variety of candidates from different parties were invited to do the same thing or invited to be showcased, Ken Blackwell has not spoken at every event that he has been invited to, but they showcase him. And if they showcase a Democrat or a Libertarian or, you know, that too, so that the folks can have some sense of choice and some freedom of choice in which to pick candidates. There is a political agenda when a religious organization wants to push one particular candidate. And the problem is when a religious organization pushes a candidate that may or may not be good for the public. And that's an issue. Everybody is not perfect. And just because I endorse a candidate doesn't mean that God is endorsing the candidate. But that's the way it looks for a lot of the masses. It looks like if the pastor, if this church is endorsing the candidate, God must be on that candidate's side. We better vote for that candidate. And you end up voting for some of the sorriest people who could ever run for office. So we are interested in church folk having freedom of choice. That's what this is about, and we are interested in churches operating in political activities with integrity.
We're gonna wrap up the press conference. Thank you all for coming. I'm gonna give John Edgar, United Methodist, chance for a closing comment before we disperse.
John Edgar, United Methodist. I actually am part of a group right now that's inviting all the gubernatorial candidates to come together to a forum at the same time. We'll see how they respond, but the letters went out last week. But I want to make one real clear comment. I'm one of the folks who wasn't in town when everybody else signed. I'm one of the names that was added in, and I'm pleased to do that. I know some of you in the press because I'm involved in a number of legislative issues, and I see some of you there. I am really concerned and appreciative for this effort because it is raising the question about whether or not two individual pastors and their organizations are violating the law. That's what's at stake here. I'm delighted to stand here today because I want to try to get this conversation back on what matters. This is not a conversation about whether or not we should have gone to Pastor Parsley ahead of time. It's about whether or not there's a violation of the IRS code. And even equally significant, if there is, the person benefiting from this, Mr. Blackwell, is the one in the state of Ohio who is charged to enforce the laws relating to elections. And as I have read the complaint, and because I've been forced to deal with this on a number of issues I've worked on, I think that the complaint has significant merit. I believe there are clear violations of the IRS rules. They involve how they did their voter registration. It involves how they are telling people what's important to vote on, and it involves how they have invited repeatedly one candidate for office. The issue is simply, have they violated the law? And as a non-lawyer, but as a pastor who has worked on a number of issues and who has changed how we've approached certain legislative issues because of these same laws, clearly there are significant violations. They knew it, and the person they were helping was someone who should have enforced the laws that were being broken. That's why we're here. That's what matters.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, Evan Davis with Pacifica Radio. This display here involving representatives of so many different faiths and so many different churches is and kind of rare and pretty impressive. Can you think of any other pivotal issues beyond the IRS compliancy here in facing Ohio or Columbus that might produce a similar unity?
Wow. I think issues surrounding education would produce similar unity, and issues around care for the elderly and how the elderly are going to be able to benefit from the prescription care programs and other health care programs, and anything that has to do with economic development for the state would rally this kind of unity. This group of clergy here are all interested in seeing that people get the full benefits of what they deserve as citizens of the United States of America. And so anything that benefits the residents of Ohio, as far as we're concerned, would unify a group of ministers like this.
What about some of the pivotal issues that Blackwell has raised as the core issues that he's campaigning upon?
We don't consider those core issues. Core issues would be education for children, health care for folks who can't afford it, economic development for the state, creation of jobs. Those are core issues. Whether gays get married or not, the abortion issue, not really important to us as far as whether abortion should remain legal or not. We don't consider that a fight yet. I may have to change my mind if it ever becomes threatened in the Supreme Court once again. But those issues do not help the majority of the people and do not affect the majority of the people living in Ohio. And so our core issues benefit or at least need to be addressed for the sake of the majority of the residents in Ohio.
Would it be fair then to say in your assessment that those who are lining up behind Blackwell consider those particular issues to be more important than the ones that you just mentioned?
Sure. Yeah, and sometimes I think they feel like those are the only two issues that are relevant in this particular campaign. But Ohio is so economically deprived right now and so economically devastated. And our public education system is one of the worst in the country. And so if we're going to really talk about what somebody who runs for office ought to be concerned about, what somebody who runs for office ought to be concerned about is how he or she can implement legislation that will benefit the most number of residents in Ohio.
Now, there are a number of African-American ministers who held a press conference not too long ago in Washington, D.C., announcing their support for Blackwell based on that narrow slate of issues that he has raised at the center of his campaign. Is there a division in the African-American faith community along those lines?
It's a small one. It depends on where you live. The black community is divided over Blackwell, over some concerns that happened in the 2004 election. And so those African-Americans who were affected by what happened in the 2004 are against Blackwell. Those who weren't affected may be for Blackwell. One of the things that African-American clergy have to be careful about is supporting Ken Blackwell just because of his race. And I have the feeling that for some of those ministers, if not most of those ministers, that may be the case. You also have a good contingency, a good number of African-American clergy who are Republican in the state of Ohio. And so naturally then those who are Republican would support Ken Blackwell being the African-American Republican candidate for governor.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Yeah. Yes.
And made even more biblical imagery and biblical references in his political speeches than Parsley and Johnson do. So, you know, why wasn't he breaking the law?
I don't even know if that law was in effect back then.
And he didn't really have
But and well, he did, because he was the pastor of Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, and then followed his dad as the pastor of Ebenezer Atlanta. So he did have a pulpit in which he was the pastor. But the issue is, you're allowed to be critical of of politicians. You're allowed to praise politicians. What you're not allowed to do is endorse a candidate while they are running for office. That's where the issue is for this group, and that's the complaint we have against Parsley Johnson and the congregations that they serve, is that they are promoting and campaigning, and it's not across the board. It is an individual candidate, which is clearly in violation of one of the tax-exempt laws. A religious organization that wants to keep its tax-exempt status cannot promote one party nor one candidate.
Has anyone get a chance to ask this whole group, have any of you ever donated you as a person to a political candidate?
No, I haven't.
I never have.
I do have to make the stipulation, the difference between what I do as an individual citizen of these United States and what I do as a pastor. I certainly have been involved from my home in candidate issues, but I do not, and I clearly keep a very strong, firm line between what I do as an individual citizen and what I do as pastor and ordained clergy in a church.
Is it a problem if Rod Parsley or his wife or whatever has donated $2,500 to Ken Black?
No. That's
clergy's
not the problem.
Private citizens can donate to Ken, and you know, and they can. I mean, we have the right to vote for our people. We can. We have our favorite candidates that we're going to vote for too.
It's when they
use their congregations or their tax-exempt subsidiaries to promote one candidate or one party.
So do you think this is happening in his Sunday services and not just on a State House rally, which arguably is not the church?
It is not happening, I don't think, in World Harvest's Sunday morning services. I don't know about Fairfield, but where it's happening is at their breakfasts and luncheons that they are sponsoring. That's where it's happening. Yes.
Now, some of the churches represented here have a history of social justice issue involvement, whether it be organizing for the homeless, whether it be campaigning for civil rights and that sort of thing. Earlier, I had asked a question about what differentiates those kinds of activities from the issues-based campaigning for a particular candidate that you're accusing the World Harvest Church and the Fairfield Church of doing. And also, what would be the impact on those churches that do have that kind of history if the IRS were to change its regulations and make it harder for everyone to be involved in political activity of any sort?
I don't think it would make any difference, because there's a completely distinct thing. Everyone's got issues. I understand that. Left, right, middle of the road, everyone's got issues. Endorsing a candidate is not going for an issue. If you want to preach 10 issues in a sermon on Sunday, that's fine. You let people decide which candidate endorses those issues. You don't endorse the candidate. That's the whole issue. Working on social justice is something that's been done since the prophet Isaiah.
It's biblical.
It's biblical. I mean, it's the central. The word justice occurs in the Bible more often than almost any other word. There's no problem with social justice. There's no problem with working for civil rights. Where, as somebody said, in a church, if it's a real church, you said this, if it's a real church, everyone can come. That's a radical inclusion. That's quite remarkable. But that's not endorsement of a political candidate. That is lifting up issues of equality, equity, freedom, access to the table. There's nothing partisan political about that. People can make that partisan political, certainly, by saying, I have the only issues that are, I'm right about everything. Everyone else is wrong about their issues. But if the minister points and says that, therefore, is the person you need to vote for, if you're going to be an authentic believer, Christian, whatever, that's wrong. That's okay. That's wrong.
What is your name, please?
Mark Bellatini, First Unitarian Universalist Church.
Great. Thank you very much.
Let me address the question about how taking away tax exemption would affect churches. It depends on what the level of taxes charge to different congregations would be out, because I'm thinking if they took the tax exemption away, they'd have to charge by size. But most certainly, if it was an across-the-board tax that congregations have to pay, it would devastate a lot of small congregations. And so I think that tax exemption at least benefits small congregations who are trying to minister in a lot of communities, some that don't engender growth, but they know they have a calling and a purpose to be in those communities, and they know they're going to be small until the end of time. And so tax exemption helps them be able to operate. If you take that away, you devastate a lot of those.
Plus, if you take away the tax exemption,